Blog Talk Radio.
As a heterosexual diversity professional, I have had connections in the LGBT community for my entire life, and I'm a devout Christian. My children's godfather is gay. A very close personal friend of our family was gay. And I have lesbian friends and have had them for many years. For me, it's just the way it is. Some people are straight, some people, like me, are straight, and some people are not. And it's in that spirit that I openly endorsed the Massachusetts court ruling on same-sex marriage in 2004, much to the horror of some of my would-be friends and clients. Now, 9 years later, LGBT and same-sex marriage issues are part of our everyday conversation. And today, to shed light on a very personal experience of what it's like to live in the LGBT community, my guest is Sima Lieberman, my friend for many years, a well-respected diversity and inclusion consultant from Berkeley, California, and a lesbian mother who recently shared her evolution on same-sex marriage following the death of her partner of 18 years, Sandra Brown. Her commentary was just published on the CNN website, and its heartwarming account of two women in love will cause you to re-examine your own perspective on LGBT issues. Stop long enough and listen to today's show, and share the interview with your friends and colleagues so that you can explore LGBT issues with greater clarity and confidence. Hello, this is Carol Copeland-Thomas, and you're listening to Focus on Empowerment. Hello, my friends. This is Carol Copeland-Thomas. Glad that you have joined us today. I hope it is sunny and pleasant wherever you happen to be, or that weather is right around the corner. I know here in the United States there have been flooding issues in the Midwest, fire issues on the West Coast, and then a myriad of other things that we are challenged with here in this country, but hopefully you will move on. But more importantly, I hope that you will really gain some insight from today's show. I've done the setup, told you about my particular perspective, but we definitely want you to ultimately examine same-sex marriage and LGBT issues for yourself. I'm also very excited about the continued support that I get for my two new books, 21 Ways to Bring Multiculturalism to Your Job, Your Home, and Your Community, and also Real Women, Real Issues, Positive Collaborations for Business Success. I have a personal goal of selling 10,000 copies, and many of you have purchased double copies with the free bonus gift. We have a wonderful Boston Pride, Boston Strong gift that goes with the two books that are only $25 total, free shipping. You can go to my website, tellcarole.com, TellCarole.com, for all the information about how you can participate and learn at the same time. Also, go to my website and you can then link to my blog and get the link to the article Sima Lieberman has written on CNN. And you can go to tellcarole.com, TellCarole.com, go to Carol's blog, and then the blog for today, May 9th, will have a link to the CNN commentary that Sima so artfully and beautifully wrote a couple of days ago that actually appeared last week on their webpage. So without further ado, I want to bring her on. She's been a friend for many years. We met through the National Speakers Association, like I am. She's a diversity professional. She's on the West Coast. I'm on the East Coast. But she has a lot of fascinating insights to share with us from her perspective. Sima Lieberman, welcome to the show.
Hi, Carol. Thank you so much for having me on. I'm honored.
I'm glad to have you. We actually talked about a year plus ago during Black History Month, I believe, just because you are a real advocate for dialogue, peaceful dialogue between Israel and Palestine. So our friends who are listening, you can go back to, I believe it was January or February of 2012, and check out that interview. It really is fascinating. So, I mean, you're really world-renowned in terms of your global focus, but now we're sort of dialing back and looking at you as a diversity professional, as a lesbian, as someone who was in a loving relationship for 18 years before your partner passed away of a massive heart attack in 2003. Walk us back to that time period, that particular day, the incidents that took place that then caused you to move from probably being pretty passive about same-sex marriage to now becoming very very much an advocate for it. Sima.
Well, first let me say that during the time that we were together, people talked a lot about gay marriage. But we didn't know like that any real gay marriage was ever going to happen. And to us, we thought, well, what is the point? It's just, you know, we were like more kind of radical in a certain way because we were a lot younger when we first got together. And we'd say, oh, it's just gay people want to imitate straight people, but they'll never really be married because they used to have, like, gay weddings. We had no idea about the rights that married people had. We didn't know, and I didn't know that until she died. And when she died, I was just considered a friend. I mean, legally, I was just a friend. And so I really didn't have the right, the legal right, to make decisions about what would happen to her. I didn't have the legal right to, she was cremated, and I didn't have the legal right to go and sit with her while, you know, while she was in, I guess, like the, I don't know what it's called, but
crematorium, I guess,
Yes, in the cremation, I guess it's kind of like a cremation box before they cremate you. I had to get permission. I mean, it wasn't just like, and if people are married, I mean, that's just what they do. We're luckier than some other people whose families have been so homophobic and anti-gay where they actually didn't even allow the person to come to the funeral. I mean, that wasn't our issue. The issue was that it was legal, and her family had their own grief to deal with. And they had to be hassled with all the phone calls by legal people, and could she have permission and all that other stuff. I mean, it was very humiliating. It was extremely humiliating, I have to tell you.
So what you're saying, you had built up a life with Sandra Brown. You met her in the early 80s. You were together for 18 years. You had a biological child. Your son had two mothers. So this relationship was intact. But from a legal perspective, the state of California did not recognize you as a married couple. And what you're saying is when your partner died, that's when the legal possibilities either happened or did not happen for not only you but also your son, who could have, in a married situation, could have received Social Security benefits because the spouse had passed away.
You're exactly right, because after she died, I needed to be there for my son. I mean, I took a lot of time off from work. And obviously it impacted my business, and it would have been a lot easier if he could. She worked for years. I don't even know how much her Social Security would have been, but she had government jobs. I mean, she had several different jobs, and she worked for years. And it could have made a major difference in his life to have her Social Security. But we weren't, I mean, it wasn't even a question of whether or not we were entitled to it. We weren't.
And from my point of view, I mean, your partner passed away at a time when here in Massachusetts, the whole issue of same-sex marriage was hotly being debated. And as I said in my setup piece, you know, I've known gay people my entire life, so that's never been an issue for me. It's something where I've certainly had to learn. I've had to learn the language to use. I certainly have had to understand about some of the relationships like any other straight person.
That's right.
But the whole concept of of gay people loving each other for me was no big deal. But it was a big deal here in Massachusetts when we were transitioning from civil unions to the legality of same-sex marriage. And I must give a big shout-out for why this became an issue where I advocated for it. And I have to say it came from my church. I belong to a very intellectual but spirit-filled, progressive African Methodist Episcopal Church here in Boston. We have people who are working 9-to-5 regular jobs, and we have people who are high-income people, and we have a lot of people who come from the various institutions here of higher learning. And in that spirit, we are encouraged to look deeply into our values and our beliefs and publicly discuss them, which we did when this took place in terms of same-sex marriage. So I was on one side, and there were church members who were on other sides. We had a superior court judge who's a member of our church who came out and gave the legalities of it, and we had a theologian who came out and gave his legalities, and we literally had this very spirit-filled intellectual debate in our church. I was on one side realizing that I'm a church officer, that I could have been kicked off the trustee board, which I was not kicked off the trustee board, but it helped me to sharpen up my beliefs and ideologies about this because I was able to openly discuss it in a group, my church family, you know, who means very much to me. Everybody doesn't have that. I mean, there are people who live in some states or some households where the door is so shut on these discussions that they don't know the facts from, you know, what is a fact and what is not a fact. How has that, you know, impacted you, Summer, with your evolution, your journey as a lesbian woman, as a diversity professional, and people who you meet and talk with?
Well, I could tell you that I was one of those people because I came out a long time ago when oftentimes you just didn't talk about being gay.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
As a diversity professional, you would think that all these other diversity professionals at that time would have been, LGBT and supportive, but that was not the case. So
mm-hmm.
In the late 80s, early 90s, when I started my work, there were people that in the early 90s, mid-90s, even late 90s, there were people in the
right.
diversity
right.
community that I didn't come out to because for three different reasons. One, I didn't want to deal with not being hired. Two, I didn't want to be left out of social interactions, which is how people got hired. And three,
mm-hmm.
ultimately, in work and in life, I didn't want to be harmed physically in any way. And it was very scary
mm-hmm.
because I think, and psychologically, it was like, I don't want to be rejected. I don't want to have to explain myself. And
mm-hmm.
LGBT people, for many of us during that time, we would always have to give these long explanations and say, oh, I'm gay, but there's all, oh, I'm gay, oh, and she likes me even though I'm gay. Well, now
mm-hmm.
that's not an issue. That's not,
mm-hmm.
that's not even, but those are the issues that we needed to deal with. And in fact,
right.
even a lot of companies had, when a lot of companies started giving domestic partnerships and health insurance, I knew people in companies, some in my client organizations, people came up to me and told me they were not about to even apply for any of those benefits because even though their company had domestic partnerships, they were afraid, they did not
right.
want people to know.
Right,
they were
right.
other people's reactions.
Yeah,
and
your point is well taken because I remember even the companies I've worked with, I had long-term relationships with some companies, and they could deal with black and white issues, they could deal with gender issues, but LGBT issues they struggled with, and some continue to struggle with, moving, transitioning from domestic benefits to domestic partner benefits to, you know, how can this person be fully functioning and how can they really reach their maximum level of potential if they are gay or lesbian? Do they have an equal shot of becoming vice president, senior vice president of a company if they are out in the company? And that's something that companies struggled with certainly 20 years ago when I was doing this work. There's some companies who are still struggling with that.
Yeah, I mean, and you could point to a lot of people. There's a lot of now. There's a lot of very successful out gay people who are they,
right.
and many of them economically they're doing very well. It's not that same fear as somebody who's say working at an hourly employee who mm-hmm. has to worry about losing their job, and they may not be as likely to come out. I know.
Right.
I remember when I first got with my partner, she was working she had a city job, and they had domestic partnership or health insurance. She wasn't even about to even go there because she was the only woman. It was like 50 men that she worked with. It was mm-hmm. she worked in construction at that time.
Yeah.
She
right.
was so afraid of being
yeah.
considered gay. There were certain like music venues we wouldn't go to because she was afraid that people who she worked with would be there.
Mm. And that, to some respect, Sima, is still the case with some jobs that are traditional gender-based jobs like construction,
oh, yeah.
utility jobs. That is still, when you're talking about working side-by-side with your colleagues, doing shift work or whatever, that's still an issue for those who can't come out. I work with companies where some family members really struggle with the conversations that take place, the jokes that are told,
yeah.
and, how do they speak up and speak out without really spilling the beans about what's going on in their own household. So you're right. We've come a long way. You look at Ellen DeGeneres. You look at Jason Collins now, who's come out, the athlete who now has publicly come out. So, we've come a long way, but in some instances, we still have a long way to go. So let me go back and
okay.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I just wanted to point out, too, that you also have to deal with the rest of your life, like your neighbors, and in different parts of the country. They may say, oh, you can be out at your job, but then you have to go back home. I just want to say one thing, that personal interaction makes such a difference, because mm-hmm. we had some people on our block who were very religious Christians. They really didn't know a whole lot about gay people, and I'm pretty sure they had some biases. But they got to know us and our family, and they really liked our son. And after my partner died, that family came and sat with me and stayed with me for several hours.
Mm-hmm.
And had they not known me, they would have had a totally different response. And, in fact, one of the men in the family said to me, he said, it's too bad you all weren't married, because then Avi could have gotten her Social Security. I was shocked. That he was this man who was coming from this very religious background, but because he knew us as people, he could make the connection.
And that's why we're doing this show today, because I want my listeners to get to know Sima Lieberman and your particular story with Sandra Brown that lasted 18 years. And as a result of that, there's a wonderful 17, 18-year-old son who is very much a part of your life. I think if people would understand the personal connections, and again, for me, it's no big deal because, I've had people close to my family, my daughter's godfather, being gay, my entire life. So when you get to know people on a personal one-to-one level, it is very different than the ideological rhetoric that can be spewed and the Bible verses that can be spewed without really understanding, the importance of this personal connection that you have to people in the LGBT community. What's it like? What are thoughts that your conversations that you have within the community that we straight people should be mindful of in terms of how to interact or some of the current issues that are swirling around in your community, Sima?
Okay, well, here's some things that are really important. Stop talking about sexual preference. We hate it. It's not a preference. Orientation. Stop using the word homosexual, LGBT, gay or LGBT. But these are things that people may mean really well, but it's important just to know the language. It's not about being politically correct. It's just about being able to really really relate to people. The other conversation that we're having is wanting to be, I mean, I don't want to say being accepted, but we're looking forward to the time when it's not going to be a big deal. When, so-and-so is with their partner. Oh, so-and-so got divorced or got married or they had kids or whatever, rather than a really big deal.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we're looking for. And in terms of support, I think what's really important to me is that if somebody is an ally, that if you hear somebody saying something homophobic or making a gay joke, don't just stand there and laugh, or don't just stand there and say nothing. Because sometimes you think that saying nothing, people will get the point. They go, oh, well, I didn't say anything. I wanted them to know that I didn't think it was funny. Sometimes it's not what you say. It's also what you don't say that is
right.
an issue. Because if you don't say something, you're not going to change anybody's mind.
Good points. Very, very good points. So the word sexual preference, not appropriate, sexual orientation is the appropriate term to use. Homosexual is not preferred. Gay or lesbian or LGBT community is the terminology of choice. And then I sort of put accepted in quotes, but normalizing the LGBT community. Would that be the appropriate phrase to use? Mainstreaming?
Yeah. Or just maybe accept. We're looking forward to the time when we don't even have to use the word accepting, that it's just an is.
It is, right.
So,
it is.
And also to realize, another thing a lot of people don't realize is that there's so many intersectionalities in the LGBT community. There's a myth that LGBT people are mostly white men. That's a myth. They're LGBT people, African American, Hispanic, Muslim, Jewish. I mean, there's every single kind of LGBT person you could imagine. We're old, we're young. Some of us are a lot more conservative than others. As I've gotten older, sometimes I shock some of my friends with how conservative I've gotten. And in fact, some of my conservative so-called moral issues help create connections between me and other people who are, say, more religious Christians, because we have something that we can actually relate to. And then when people start seeing that you have things in common, they can't hate you anymore. Once they know you, they really can't hate you. And
well, that's the bottom line of diversity and multiculturalism, is to not only talk about the differences, but most importantly, talk about the differences related to the similarities, so that you can come to a common ground in building relationships with those who are different or similar than you.
And another thing too, something I was just thinking about how to educate people. When my son was in elementary school, I remember my partner and I, we did so much work at his school. We volunteered all the time because on the one hand, we didn't want people to have like negative feelings of, oh, gay people or, you know, lesbian parents. But the other thing is we really wanted people to know us as human beings.
Right.
And also for him, for his friends, so that if his friends liked us, which they did, they loved us, that they wouldn't be saying things like, oh, that's so gay, and that they would change their opinions. And I have to say that when my partner died, his friends, all in his class, everybody wrote cards. His teacher had everybody write cards. And we also had a memorial in his classroom. And it really touched people because they knew me and they knew her. So they couldn't think of us as weird people. They knew us. They knew us as parents. They knew us as people who helped make the school better. And they knew us as fun people, too. We were a lot of fun parents.
Well, very involved and very loving, and that
definitely comes across. And I would encourage those who are in our chat room and those who are listening by phone and those who are listening after the fact, go to my website, www.tellcarol.com. Go to the May 9th blog, and you will link to the CNN article that is beautifully written by Sima Lieberman that goes back to, I believe it came out originally on Wednesday, May 1st. So that you don't have to worry about searching and doing all that stuff, you can go right to my website blog, today's blog, the 9th, and then you can pull up the article and read it for yourself. Sima, give us a sense of where do we go from here. We have currently, there are same-sex marriages legally recognized in the United States. There are 11 states, Connecticut, Delaware, Iowa, Maine, Maryland, New Hampshire, New York, Rhode Island, Vermont, the state of Washington, and then my state, the first state that actually acknowledged it and recognized it in 2004, Massachusetts, as well as the District of Columbia, D.C., obviously, and three native tribes have legalized same-sex marriage. It represents 16.7% of the U.S. population. And in addition, California, which briefly granted same-sex marriage in 2008, now recognizes them on a conditional basis. So where do we go from here, Sima Lieberman, when you're talking about those who want to learn more about it, those who want to clarify their own personal viewpoints, and those who really want to advocate for the kind of change that will make this an is statement a way where people can be accepted regardless of who they are going forward?
Well, one thing is anytime there's an opportunity in your state to vote for it, vote, get out and vote for it and get other people to vote for it. And if you belong to any kind of religious institution or any kind of association, to be willing to speak out and to speak out in favor of it. And ultimately, it has to change at the federal level. So we really have to push for change at the federal level because, I mean, I don't want anybody else to have to go through what I went through where you lose, a parent is lost, and the child doesn't have any benefits at all. And the time and energy that you have to spend fighting for things when you're grieving, it's exhausting. It's exhausting. So, and people can feel free to contact me and ask me any question they would like. There's no stupid question.
Give us your website and also phone number where our listeners can reach out to you directly.
Okay, it's www.simalieberman.com, SimaLieberman.com. And my phone number is 510-527-0700, 510-527-0700. And I'm available to come and speak to your group or organization because I think that this is really important. If we're going to be an inclusive society, it means we include everybody.
So true, so very true. Well, you've been a great guest, and we have decided we're going to do a webinar just to expand on this conversation. We just sort of touched the surface today, but we'll go more in depth about ways that we can build alliances with the LGBT community, ways that things can be understood more clearly, and how you can have a healthy debate regardless of what your opinion happens to be. We'll talk more about that with a webinar that we're going to have in the next month. We'll give you the date and the time and all the information and the details going forward. But again, Sima Lieberman, thank you so much for being a great guest, a great friend for so many years. We wish you all the best, Avi, as well. And we look forward to the webinar and future conversations as our country continues to move forward with this really important topic. Thank you so much, Sima, for what you're doing and what you continue to do. Take care.
Thank you, Carol. Bye.
All right. And we thank you so much for listening today. Have a great week or weekend wherever you happen to be. Go out there and make it a great day. Remember that empowerment begins when you believe in yourself. This is Carol Copeland Thomas signing off. We'll talk to you next week.